the powers conferred upon electric cooperatives by the ECCA, council argues, may not be amended by a mere regulatory enactment. But I draw the court's attention to the fact that the powers conferred upon home rule cities by Articles 1108 and 1175 to extend their service, municipal utilities to extend their service in areas within their extraterritorial jurisdiction have been decided by the courts to have been effectively repealed insofar as they conflict with the certification jurisdiction of the Commission of the PURA. Municipalities and their utilities may not, even within their extraterritorial jurisdiction, invade the areas certificated to public utilities without themselves going to the Commission now for certificates of public convenience and necessity. The determination has got to be made, regardless of the powers provisions of the acts that were previously enacted, the determination has got to be made as to what the public convenience and necessity dictates in a case where these powers come into conflict with the Public Utility Regulatory Act. Another response to counsel's argument in that respect is that there would be, of course, no rate regulation of electric cooperatives in the event that the Public Utility Regulatory Act must give way to the powers provisions of the ECCA, since those very self-same powers provisions allow electric cooperatives to regulate their own rates. Again, the question arises as to whether we are going to be serving the public convenience and necessity or not. Did or did not the legislature intend to regulate electric cooperatives? Did it intend to, as it said, bring them within the full regulatory ambit of the Commission's authority and subject them to the public convenience and necessity? Prior to the enactment of the PURA, most of the states which had enacted regulatory legislation had either exempted electric cooperatives from that regulation, from those regulatory systems altogether, or had exempted them from most of the provisions and merely provided that they could not compete with certificated utilities within their certificated areas of convenience and necessity. Now, that was an option open to the Texas legislature. Had it wanted to do that, it could have. It did that in the case of municipal utilities. It, in effect, stated that municipal utilities were not public utilities, that they were not to be regulated by the Public Utility Commission, but, of course, they were to be regulated only in the sense that if they intended to go in and try to serve areas that were certificated to other utilities, they must come to the Commission for approval, and the public convenience and necessity must be determined in that event. That is really, in effect, what the position that Council would put electric cooperatives in. The central question is, why, if the legislature intended to do that, why didn't it do it? Why didn't it reserve for electric cooperatives the same status that it reserved for municipal utilities and some of the other, I guess what we call quasi-regulated utilities? It had that option, and it knew how to do it. And these very concerns were expressed to the legislature prior to the enactment of this legislation, or at least they were expressed, as has been cited in the Baylor Law Review. They were debated by electric cooperatives. The question of full regulatory authority over their rates and over their territories and so on, this was not something that was gone into blindly. It was discussed and debated prior to the enactment of passage of the PURA. And electric cooperatives are on the record as having been against, of course, as is natural, a regulation of their rates, which was the most, I suppose, detrimental aspect of regulation that they might encounter, but were willing to accept that if they would receive, in effect, as a quid pro quo, or as to better enable them to carry out their duties as public utilities, I'll put it that way, if they were to receive the territorial protection or the continuity and stability that would justify their going in and making the expenditures and being subjected to the high convenience and necessity standards that were being imposed upon all other public utilities. And if the legislature had wanted to do otherwise, it certainly knew how to do it. Council has suggested that the provisions of the federal enactment might somehow be violated or position of elected cooperatives might in some manner be jeopardized by an interpretation of this act in strict accordance with its terms. We'd simply respond that this is a concern that need not be worried about. These matters are not jeopardized. The REA is not going to continues its loan programs and has funded many, many, many utilities serving in urban areas throughout the country and will continue to do so. In this connection, I'd also like to point out that electric cooperatives are not completely tax exempt. Their tax status is that their taxable income is taxed. One of the questions asked co-counsel, was what the effect on the membership provisions of electric cooperatives this enactment would have if construed as it should be and as it is worded. It would have no effect on their membership. It simply would expand their membership qualifications to meet the dictates of the public convenience and necessity. They would not be entitled to serve non-members, and there's no assertion that they would. It's simply that membership would not be restricted to only those persons situated outside of areas inhabited by 1,500 or more people. I would simply like to point out to the court that the central question in interveners' mind at this point is, did the legislature intend to regulate it? Did it intend to regulate electric cooperatives or didn't it? Now, we've been going under the assumption, all electric cooperatives have been going under the assumption in this state since the passage of the Regulatory Act, that act said exactly that it meant exactly what it says. That they would be subjected to the enhanced standards of public convenience and necessity to which public utilities are subjected, and that in order to fulfill their obligations under the Act, it would be necessary for them to go into the areas to which they had been certificated and equip themselves to provide for the public convenience and necessity, to provide the needed services and to tool up for whatever expansion, whatever customers might come into the area. This is exactly what happened in the City of Brownsville case that has been cited to the court. In that case, there wasn't a single consumer living in the certificated area to which Magic Valley Electric Cooperative, which we represent, had been certificated. And yet the court held in that case, and we believe correctly so, that Magic Valley had gone in pursuant to its obligations under Section 58 of the Act, pursuant to its obligations as a public utility, which had been certificated to meet the ongoing public convenience and necessity in that area. It had gone in and made substantial investments, built substations, run its lines, and done all these various things, and the court held, and we believe correctly so, that Magic Valley was serving. It was, by abiding by its certification requirements, it was serving in that area. Now, under the old scheme of things, prior to the PURA, and as interpreted, as council would interpret it, Magic Valley would have had no need to do that. It would not have had to meet the standards of public convenience and necessity. It did so, and it believes, and we believe, that in order to continue to do so, there has got to be the continuity, there has got to be the stability in these areas of convenience and necessity that the legislature envisioned. And that continuity and stability would be damaged considerably by an interpretation of the Act removing a considerable segment of the public utility population in this state from the regulatory scheme. We merely request the court to give full effect to the Act as it is literally reads. There's no need to imply anything into the provisions of the Act. Section 55 are quite plain, and it's quite obvious that they were enacted for the purpose of meeting these very concerns and of assuring this stability and this continuity of public service, and assuring, as the legislature stated it, to assure the rates, operations, and services which would be just and reasonable to consumers and to the utilities. Does the court have any questions?
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
We'll hear the reply from the appellant.
May it please the court, counsel. I too would like for the court to read the act literally, not only the Public Utility Regulatory Act, but also the Electric Cooperative Corporation Act. I find it distressing that no one other than Central Fire and Light Company seems to be addressing Section 36 of the Electric Cooperative Corporation Act. I think that section says exactly what it means. I think it was designed to prevent the amendment of that act by accident, by implication, by repeal that was not intended. When we speak of, yes, Your Honor.
Didn't Mr. Mills in his amicus brief specifically address your argument on 36, Section 36, and cited the case of Tri-County Electric Cooperative versus Clare?
Yes, Your Honor, he did, and that case was decided by the Fort Worth Court in 1949, refused NRE as to writ. However, the entire citation that is applicable is not provided by Mr. Mills. At page 683 of that opinion, the court said that the rule that is set out above is not applicable to the situation before us because 1528B does not purport to regulate the height of transmission lines. In fact, it does not contain, the court goes on to say, safety measures of any sort. It's not reasonable to suppose that the legislature, by the enactment of the above quoted Section 36, intended to exempt corporations organized under said statute from general policy or safety regulations of the
That's
kind provided for 36.
Police rather than policy.
I beg your pardon. Police or safety regulations of the kind provided for in Article 1436. And I agree with that entirely. And I would go on to say, Your Honor, that it is not reasonable to suppose that the legislature intended to exempt cooperative corporations from regulation in any activity which they can lawfully conduct. In any activity which they can lawfully conduct. Ergo, I would say, in response to the argument that in the event my client's position is correct, electric cooperatives will no longer have to worry about being regulated as to rates, that's wrong. I don't think that's correct at all. They can lawfully charge rates to customers under the ECC Act. If they can lawfully charge rates, if they can lawfully, they have the power and authority to do something, that something which they have the power and authority to do can be regulated. That's our position. I have never taken the position that it was to be supposed and presumed and conceded that if my client's position in this case were correct, that the commission would have no rate regulatory authority. I think the legislature intended that they be regulated as to their rates because they have the power and authority to charge rates. But on the other hand, they do not have the power and authority to operate inside incorporated municipal areas. That power and authority was denied them by the legislature in the enactment of Article 1528B, the Electric Cooperative Corporation Act. It has continued to deny them that authority. It has not amended that act. It specifically states in the Public Utility Regulatory Act that when it talks about corporations, cooperative corporations, it is talking about corporations organized and operating under that act. Who is it that provided the kiss that magically transformed the frog to the prince here? It wasn't the legislature. The legislature didn't do it. The PUC did it. The PUC made, quote, full-fledged, end quote, utilities of these electric cooperatives by its interpretation of this statute. It wasn't the legislature that kissed them. Council have brought up several points to which I'd like to respond. One is, Council for the State called your attention to the fact that Section 3C of the Act defines a co-op as a public utility. Of course it does. And it goes on to say, quote, when used in this act, end quote. The term, when used in this act, but the language of that act does not attempt to enlarge the basic powers of the corporation so defined for the purposes of that act. Council has talked about public convenience and necessity. Obvious public convenience and necessity, obviously that is a consideration under this statute, and it's obviously appropriate that it be. But you cannot ignore the lawful authority of a corporation acting in the public convenience and necessity. If the lawful authority is absent, there is no public convenience and necessity. It's just that simple. Council has indicated that the ECC Act has personal restrictions as to service as opposed to area restrictions. I submit that's altogether wrong. If you look at the ECC Act, you'll find that it speaks directly of areas, rural areas, specific defined areas of service which are permitted to electric cooperative corporations. Council says Arkansas has gone full circle, and indeed Arkansas has. But Arkansas went full circle not by the enactment of or amendment of its Public Utility Regulatory Act, but by amendment of its Electric Cooperative Corporation Act. It had a Section 36, and the legislature recognized that in order to change that act, in order to bring it into harmony, if that's what they wanted to do with the Public Utility Regulatory Act, that they had to amend the ECCA. And they did that, as the record before this court will show. Council has again talked about a comprehensive system of regulation. I addressed that to begin with, how people get so enthralled with the word comprehensive that they forget what its meaning is. Talks about adequate to a comprehensive system, adequate to regulate rates and services. I submit to your honors that this statute, the PURA, is adequate to regulate rates and services which can lawfully be charged by a cooperative corporation or by any other utility company. But it does not attempt to, it does not say that it attempts to, expand the powers of those cooperative corporations.
Counselor?
Yes, sir.
Am I missing the point, or are you basically arguing that once Beeville annexed this area in which San Patricio was providing service, San Patricio is no longer lawfully providing service to any of that area that's within the city limits of Beeville?
That is essentially my argument, Your Honor. That is essentially my argument.
You contend it's the legislative intent that the city council annexing an area, they just lop off that established business of the cooperative?
No, sir. No, sir. That's not the effect of the Electric Cooperative Corporation Act. Article 1528B does not lop them off, as you say. What Article 1528B does is say that they cannot extend service to new customers within that area. That was decided by this court in the Upshur case, and the statute was subsequently in 1957, if I recall correctly, at which time some of us in this room have direct memory of it, perhaps, was amended to conform with that decision. But it's not my contention it locked them off. My contention, Your Honor, is that as a matter of law, the certificates of convenience and necessity issued to cooperatives are impressed with the limitations of the Electric Cooperative Corporation Act, because those are basic limitations on the powers, the basic powers and authorities of those corporations. And this act does not state anywhere that it seeks to enlarge those powers. Council has referred you to cases regarding the repeal of statutes concerning the rights of municipalities to serve in their extraterritorial jurisdiction. And this court has said, and other courts have said, and correctly so, in my judgment, that the Act, PURA, curtails that right. And I agree with that. But those statutes did not have a provision such as Article 1528B, Section 36. Did the legislature intend to make full-fledged utilities of these co-ops? If so, it doesn't say so. As a matter of fact, it says to the contrary. All it would have had to say would be simply to have amended Article 1528B, the ECCA, by saying that in the event of conflict between the provisions of this act and Article 1446C, the PURA shall prevail.
How do you counter argument Mr. Narquist about municipal utilities as opposed to electric cooperatives, where he says that here legislature specifically exempted municipal utilities?
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm sorry I missed that. Because it was necessary in the case of municipal utilities to do that. It was not necessary in the case of electric cooperative corporations to do that by reason of the plain provisions of the ECCA and Section 36. All the legislature had to do to leave the cooperatives in precisely the position they were in was not to amend the ECCA, and they chose to take that alternative. In order, however, to put the municipalities in a position that the legislature wanted the municipalities to be in, and in a position that municipalities wanted to be in, the legislature had to speak to it. They did not have to speak to the other. They did, interestingly enough, address that question as to telephone cooperatives, and they did amend 1528C in that same session of the legislature to bring it in harmony. But they did not do that as regards electric cooperatives governed under 1528B. I do not think it was the intent of the legislature to force membership in a cooperative upon the public residing in urban areas. And yet, the interpretation of the statute which the PUC has given, the interpretation of the statute which SPEC has represented to you that it has this morning, would have membership in a cooperative corporation forced upon one who would have to be served by that corporation, regardless of whether he's a rural customer as defined by the basic constitutive statute, the ECCA, or not. We respectfully submit that this case should be reversed, judgment should be rendered, that the appellant have the permanent injunction against the enforcement of the order of the PUC. I appreciate very greatly your attention to the appellant's argument. I would ask leave of court for permission to file a post-argument brief. And my reason for doing so is that I have not specifically addressed many of the cases brought up in the reply briefs to our brief. Frankly, I find that none of them address the Section 36 issue, but I would like the opportunity to file a very brief post-submission brief with the court.
How much time do you need, counsel?
Your Honor, I'm at the court's disposal.
1 week?
Fine. That will be
satisfied. Counsel, how much time do you need to reply?
1 week.
The appellant will have 1 week to file a brief. The appellee, 1 week from today. Yours was 1 week from today, and yours 1 week from today, you received a copy of his brief to reply. The case
Thank
will
you.
Be submitted on briefs and oral argument. The court will take a 10-minute recess.